cannot be ruled. To challenge them is to court death.
On a day. Where superheroes rose.
Why would I trust you? You wouldn't.
You were made to be ruled.
And podcasters united. And on the day,
what are you prepared to do?
No offense, but I don't play well with others.
Big man in a suit of armor. Take that away, what are you?
Genius, billionaire, playboy, philanthropist.
The Marvel cast was born. News, reviews, and superhero-sized commentary. Marvel Cast, Earth's mightiest podcast.
Anyone else?
Now, join your hosts, Dave Senden and Mark Herleman. Podcasters, assemble!
Dr. Banner, your work is unparalleled, and I'm a huge fan of the way you lose control and turn into an enormous green rage monster.
All right, guys, and welcome to this episode of Marvel Cast, Earth's Mightiest Podcast, the only show on the internet that leaves an Ant-Man-sized impression, but a giant man impact. I am your host, David Senden, the master of all this, and with me is your friend and mine, guy goes by many names. He's the Peter Parker to the Venom to the Symbiote to the Thanos freakout mode, the wielder of the Infinity Gauntlet, the bipolar Star Wars fan himself, the original OG Rogue One, he's Mark Herleman. Mark, how you doing?
I'm the Lang to your Pim. Doing pretty good, man. Doing...
The Lang to the Pim. I'm not sure how that sounds to other people.
Maybe a little lame.
Oh, yes, a little Lang, perhaps. All right, well, we are here today to talk about Ant-Man.
Imagine a soldier the size of an insect. The ultimate secret weapon.
If you give godlike powers to everyone, it's going to be chaos.
So how do we stop him?
I know a guy. Scott, I've been watching you for a while. You're different. And I believe everyone deserves a shot at redemption. Do you?
Absolutely. My days of breaking into places and stealing stuff are over. What do you want me to do?
I want you to break into a place and steal some stuff.
Makes sense.
Are you ready to become the hero?
Now, the suit has power. You have to learn how to control it. And these are your greatest allies.
You're kind of cute. Whoa.
When you're small, you have superhuman strength.
you like a bullet. So you need to know how to punch.
You want to show me how to punch? Show me how to punch.
That's how you punch.
You tried to hide your suit from me. Now, it's gonna blow up in your face and destroy everyone you care about.
Scott, get out of there!
Did you think you could stop the future? You're just a thief!
No.
I'm Ant-Man.
I know. Wasn't my idea.
Now, Mark, I would just say this right up front. I had my reservations about this one when Marvel first announced it. I'm like, Ant-Man, are you serious?
Yeah, I was like, a little too late, Marvel. You've kind of missed that opportunity.
Well, I mean, I think if I remember right, and I think what you're saying, the too late, was... Wasn't Edgar Wright working on an Ant-Man way before even the MCU took the shape it currently has?
I think that was the case. You know, for me, I think the hardest part was them going so far forward with the storyline for Ultron. It was like, you guys needed to have, you know, Pym involved already. But I think the way they went about it was clever enough to make it work. You know, they basically removed Pym from the Ultron vision.
Which is why I think they took, which is why I think Edgar Wright walked and we ended up with the guy who brought us Spear Fingers.
Probably the case. But I like the fact, though, that opens up a different angle for Pym's story. You know, I think it's more, I feel like it's the Marvel comic story that is more focused on him and his daughter than it was on him and his mistake with Ultron.
Oh,
like,
absolutely.
Marvel, they really play up that Ultron angle. You know, I mean, that's Hank Pym's number one. You know, he might as well be a villain to some heroes because he created that. Like, that was such a bad thing. You know, and I mean, defeating Ultron has destroyed the universe a couple different times. And some, I mean, Marvel's Age of Ultron comic story that came out right around the time as the movie, you know, we saw Wolverine going back in time to assassinate Hank Pym. And he does. And because he does that, Ultron doesn't get created. Ultron doesn't get created, therefore Vision doesn't get created. Vision doesn't get created. Vision was never an Avenger. A Vision not being an Avenger means that all these atrocities that Vision as an Avenger stopped weren't stopped, and all of those tended to be cosmic. And so basically when Wolverine showed back up into his present, the cosmic entities had came to Earth and whooped Earth and taken it over, and Earth's now even worse than would have been under Ultron. And so then he has to travel back in time again and stop himself from killing Hank, which was an interesting thing in the comic because the two Wolverines, the future one and the slightly future one that was in the past, they're like, well, which one of us is going to do it? And the future one's going, I've seen way too many horrors. You know what to do. You go forward. And so the one that went back to the future ends up dying and telling the other one, you know, don't kill Hank. You need to tell Hank what to do. And so in the end, he tells Hank, look, you're going to create this monster. This monster's going to beat us time and time again. And, you know, about the 45th time it's beaten us, it's going to win. So you need to put in a kill switch on the 46th time kind of thing. And really, in the end, like, they almost made Ultron so powerful that they couldn't touch him. So I get redoing Ultron's story the way they did in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. But that opens up the aspect of the Lang or the Pym and his daughter kind of scenario, which I think actually in the current ones, it's Lang and his daughter, which are the ones that are playing that angle out. But I think in the Cinematic Universe, they're making it be Pym's daughter, which I think that's a cool angle. And then they're able to play on the fact that Scott Lang ends up later taking over as Ant-Man. So they jump right to that. You know, I mean, at the point that Lang takes over, Pym has already done an assortment of personas for Ant-Man. He was Ant-Man, he was Giant-Man, he was Yellowjacket, and then eventually Lang comes and steals the suit, and then eventually they bring Lang in and make him a good guy, not a criminal, and he becomes Ant-Man full on. But I did see, though, that one of the Lego sets for this new movie shows Ant-Man in his giant man persona. So we are going to start seeing some of the growth side of things. But I like the fact that they tied in all those different suits and stuff. I mean, Yellow Jacket, he came in, he played the role, and, you know, it wasn't the same Yellow Jacket we saw in the Marvel Comics, but it still had its time, it still had its screen stuff. But I think the thing that got me the most excited was the Hank Pym actually wearing the suit back in the early days of S.H.I.E.L.D. stuff, where we saw the Wasp as well, and we saw her fate, and we learned about what can happen when you shrink too small, because that's definitely the big risk of Ant-Man. I mean, that's something that even the comics have played up time and time again. I mean, when they did the Secret Invasion story arc and Janet Van Dyne was going to explode from the Skrull little super virus they put inside her that was going to wipe out everybody, she realized what was going to happen and shrunk microscopic and basically disappeared. They all thought she exploded, but reality was she shrunk to that point like she did in the film. So I like the fact that those things stay true, and they keep a lot of that. There's a lot of truth in this story, even though it's a retelling.
Oh yeah, definitely. Now Paul Rudd, let's talk about him.
All right.
My first impression when they brought on Paul Rudd is, what a genius bill of casting. And here's why. Because I think, and correct me if I'm mistaken, Mark, but I think that you need a comedian to sell a character that's kind of seen by some, you know, some that aren't in the hardcore comic sweaty nerd camp, to sell a character that's seen by some as not exactly that. He's almost seen as too funny.
Yeah, that was my issue when I first saw Paul Rudd too. You know, I've talked about my wife not being a Paul Rudd fan, and so anytime Paul Rudd's in anything, I feel like I've got to be a apologist for him. You know, like, oh, he's really funny kind of thing. But, you know, like Anchorman, there's a film I don't really care for. I just, not my type of humor. And while he does a good job in that, him and Seth Rogen, Will Ferrell. That's just a type of humor that does, it's hit or miss with me. I don't always find it as funny as everyone else does. Like my sister's a huge Will Ferrell fan. You know, put him in anything, she's going to love it. But for me, it really, I didn't care for the movie Elf, but I liked the Stepdad movie, or the one with Mark Wahlberg.
Daddy's Home.
It's hit or miss when it comes to Will Ferrell-type movies. And here I'm about to call him Scott Lang.
Oh, God, we would have been having a very different conversation.
But Paul Rudd's one of those characters that is hit or miss for me, but I enjoy him more often than I do, say, a Seth Rogen's type. Like Seth Rogen, it feels like Seth Rogen's playing Seth Rogen doing whatever he's doing. Hey, look, it's Seth Rogen playing the Green Hornet. Oh, hey, look, it's Seth Rogen playing a blob. Oh, hey, look, it's Seth Rogen playing your neighbor.
Oh, yes.
It falls into a little more two type cast, whereas Paul Rudd has this incredible acting ability that I think he doesn't get enough credit for, and this film really shines it. You know, him playing a character that's on the fringe like he is, it allows his humor to lighten the mood, and he uses that in ways that drives the character. It makes you endeared to his characters, and that's an angle that I'm always pointing out to my wife. You know, I'm like, you know, hey, look, he's doing good, he's rocking this, but this film. I got to admit, I was shocked that this was probably my wife's number one favorite Marvel film to date. We come away with that, and I was beaming just on that fact alone. Like, my wife was finally excited about a Paul Rudd feature, you know, because when we heard that, she was like, oh, I'm not going to watch it. Nope, it's got that guy in it. And I'm just like, come on, really? Like, please don't. Like, my wife, like, we'll follow an actor, and we're like, yeah, you know, we like this actor. Like, Ryan Reynolds, he did this movie, like, I think it was called Summer Camp or something like that. And in it, I watched it before my wife, and in it, he ends up cheating on his wife with some little teenage girl. So I'm like, we're never watching this film. Like, I would not let her watch it, because those are the type of things. Like, if an actor picks a movie like that, she's just like, oh, I'm done with that guy. He did it. So I'm like, we don't want this. It's Ryan Reynolds. No. Buried Alive. I wouldn't let her watch that one either. I'm like, no, we've got to keep Ryan Reynolds on the pedestal. He's on your list. He's going to stay there, because I've got a list, and by golly, someday, Rachel McAdams, saying, which also, man, Rachel McAdams, Strange, I didn't even know that was going to happen, but But yeah, so back to Ant-Man. This movie definitely, it excited me. It surprised me. And I like the angles they played. I like the whole fact that they brought in the Falcon briefly. And they even played that up in the little TV spot where Falcon's introducing him with Cap. So I thought that was kind of a nice little touch, too.
Is it me, or did I think that scene where you had Ant-Man and Falcon needed something more? I think what it needed, you know, as Ant-Man is kind of flying around, right? I think what it needed was go inside and you see the POV from Lang's perspective, right? But you see everyone briefly, and maybe there's like Hulk's hand kind of trying to swat at Ant-Man.
that Super Bowl trailer where Hulk was chasing Ant-Man was cute. Made me kind of bummed that Hulk's not in the Civil War. I'm like, come on, man.
Well, I know, but he is, a little Hope and Crosby with Thor.
Yeah, that's it. So when I think about angles that they play, and like, you know, you think about like how they brought in X-Men First Class, how they brought in Hugh Jackman for that like small little cameo. I wonder if they will do something similar to that or more like what they did with Captain America or Civil War, no, with Age of Ultron, when they did Avengers 2, where they talked about I can't think of the actress's name. I mean, Padme Amidala.
Yes, Natalie Portman.
Mention her character being, you know, they talked about her and Pepper Potts out doing something. They were only mentioned by name, but for me, that works. I'm like, hey, they were there. They weren't forgotten, and I think that that's something they need to do. Whether it be like, you know, just Thunderbolt Ross talking about, you know, hey, this has gone on in New York, this has gone on over here, and oh, by the way, we got a picture of the Hulk running off through the woods. Like, we don't even know what's going on with the Hulk. We're still tracking him down. And, you know, maybe you get like a message from Thor or a passing comment from Cap going, yeah, Thor's over in Asgard doing something. He's going to be gone for like 6 months or, you know, something like that. Just, I don't know. I think having some of the team missing from something, you know, so big as the next event coming up.
He was last spotted in some John Carter of Mars gladiator armor.
Yeah. But see, like Ant-Man, I love where they've positioned this character for what's coming forward. Like, I mean, I question if we're going to get an Ant-Man 2. Because of it? Because
We're getting Ant-Man and the Wasp.
Okay. So it is. Okay. See, I was not aware of that.
Yeah.
That they're going to be using Angelina or whatever her name.
Evangeline Lilly.
Yeah.
I thought was, I mean, one, she's a great actress. She hopped around as an elf very convincingly, but... I thought she was a little underused in Ant-Man.
I thought that they... I agree, and I think I agree for a weird reason, because like, I felt like they were setting her up for the sequel.
It purely felt like a character setup, and that was it.
Yeah, but unlike, say, Elektra and Daredevil, this Daredevil film that was Ant-Man... actually carried itself, where you didn't have to make a sequel based on the sidekick character.
True.
But she really looked like Janet. Like, that's what really threw me off, was the fact that she wasn't Janet, she was Janet's daughter. I was like, wow, okay. I mean, I like that. Like, that's a smart play on it, because...
Well, no, I know. It's the same kind of thing I say of the Daisy Ridley as Rey. I'm like, you don't cast that close to Natalie Portman if you're not going for something.
Yeah, true. And it was definitely, you know, I like the fact that her story was almost as central as Paul Rudd's characters was, you know. Scott Lang and her character, you know, it was more about them finding themselves and finding their way, and I do hope they become a team, because like, that was the angle about Hank and Janet that worked really cool.
Mm-hmm.
Was they got to be a team, and we actually got to see that for even you know, the one or two scenes it was, we still got to see that happen, and I thought that was really cool. And it also made Douglas's character have more gravitas in the film, because that was one angle that really perturbed me at first, was that Hank Pym was being regulated to the side, and then we found out that he was just some old fogey. I was like, wait, he's old? But again, I'm not big on the Agent Carter, but the opportunity for them to tie those characters into the Agent Carter line. Like, if they don't do that, I think that's a dropping of the ball, because you've set that up so well. And now you've got these characters, the Ant-Man, and you've got the Wasp in that time zone active. You know, to not bring them in, it just seems like a drop the ball on such a level as to turn around and shoot the ball into the enemy's frickin' goal.
Yeah, pretty much.
What did you think of Yellowjack and the guy that played him? I mean, that guy, I thought he did a great job as a villain.
I'm just going to say, Marvel, I love you, but other than Loki, give me a villain I can work with. You know, I'm being serious here. I love Marvel films, but other than Loki, it was just, you know, sheer perfection as the villain, right? I mean, I will even say this for 1 second, Mark, if I can. I would want to see Tom Hiddleston as a young Emperor Palpatine.
Ooh,
he is kinda just that good. But
that though, he's gonna look
again. Going back to Marvel, I'm sorry, gang. Star Wars, Marvel, they're like distant cousins now. You can't talk one without rubbing at the other. I know that sounds weird, but other than Loki, give me some villains I can work with, Marvel. I mean, Ultron, I felt was okay, but I also felt like they could have planted a little more seeds with Ultron's origin. You know, I don't know about you, Mark, but to me, it felt like they just flipped the switch and Ultron was there.
Yeah. They basically, I mean, I felt like with Ultron, they kind of took that alien tech and basically was like, hey, let's give this alien tech a body.
Pretty much, yeah. It was like a weird Bionic Man episode.
Yeah. But I got to admit, though, Corey Stoll, he played Darren Cross in Ant-Man. And while he may not have done the best performance, that guy's looks, like, I really got into the fact that, like, he looked like a character that you just wanted Paul Rudd's character to just smack in the face.
And yes, he did.
Like, I don't know. There was that vindictive, like, that glorious retribution when the final come down happened. You're like, yes, finally. Like, but I don't know. Like, I really got a kick out of the suit and the way Corey played Darren Cross. Like, I really liked that. Like, I felt like he did almost as good a job as Jeff Bridges did playing the villain Foil in Iron Man 1. You know, like, it just felt very natural. It felt like a natural progression of the character to be the villain. Whereas, like, say, in Iron Man 3, you know, we saw the guy that creates AIM. Like, that one felt weird because it was like,
yeah.
Oh, you
know. No, that one felt a little bit, wait, that one was about as weird as the Mandarin being Ringo Starr and double teaming two blondes, and it's just weird.
What's this, man?
Yeah, I know. Let's not talk about that one ever again.
But yeah, so like I said, Darren Cross's character was one that I went back and forth with. I liked the way they played it. I liked the actor. Like, yeah, you know, they might have been able to have written the character a little bit better, but I don't remember the character in the comics being, you know, like some big bad A villain. So I thought they did a good job. Like, he always felt like he was a run of the mill type villain as it was. So, you know, I felt like they did a good job in that regard.
Oh, yeah.
Honestly, I think about Ant-Man and stuff, I can't think of many of the mainstay villains that he has to fight.
True. I can't either, which, you know, it surprises me why a sequel was even announced. I'm like, what? I can't think, other than most Marvel characters where I know their rogues gallery.
Oh, it's a team building.
I can't even think of Ant-Man's rogue gallery of villains.
Well, think about it. Okay, we know there's a new Avengers base, right? Now,
yeah.
They haven't coined that a new Avengers team. They're still Avengers. I could see them doing this as all a big push for a second Avengers team. Them going forward with the Avengers initiative beyond just one team. Going, you know what?
The secret Avengers angle?
Yeah, going that route. Well, doing it, but before they go Secret Avengers, I could see them going full on. We're going to have basically the West Coast Avengers, but instead of calling them the West Coast Avengers, they're going to go the New Avengers. We're going to have a New Avengers team over here, and this is going to be the team, and they're going to pull these people. And I think that that's what they're doing. I think, you know, Ant-Man 2 is going to be, Wasp's going to be brought in and introduced. They're going to make Ant-Man a more, you know, you need this guy on your team, and this is why kind of scenario. And it must be to serve why Wasp is coming, because Ant-Man will have solidified his spot on the team, and she'll basically be like his sidekick slash partner, and the two of them will come across, and they'll be a team. And, you know, I see that being like a buildup, because, okay, think about it. If you've got Doctor Strange coming out, okay, they're talking about Iron Fist, okay, Luke Cage is having one. Now, if you take these two characters, you put them with Spider-Man, you put them with Luke Cage, you put them with Iron Fist, you've already got the New Avengers team practically. Throw in Wolverine if you could, and you would pretty much have that team from the comics.
Now, why is it when you say West Coast Avengers, all I can think of is straight out Asgard?
I don't know. That's the thing. I came to Avengers at the Mighty Avengers story. When I got into the Avengers comics, that was when it picked up. It was right after Civil War. Stark was basically the new Nick Fury. He's the director of S.H.I.E.L.D. at this point. And he puts Captain Marvel in charge, which is the lady that's doing it, Carol Danvers at this point. And so he puts her in charge of the team. And that was where I came in. And Hank came back and a bunch of other people came back. And one of the first fights they do is with a lady version of Ultron, of all things.
Oh, well, my.
Yeah,
or to say it with that George Sakai flavor, oh my.
Oh my. Yeah, and from there it went into Secret War and stuff, and it was a really cool story. But then I looked back on the history, and it was the West Coast Avengers, the Great Lakes Avengers, all these other Avengers, and I'm like, wow, like they were really trying back in the day to make this work. And yet in so many levels, that is classic Avengers. Right now we've got the Uncanny Avengers. We've got the Infinity Avengers. We've got the Unity Squad Avengers. And then we've got the Mainstay Avengers. It's just ironic. And they did that whole shakeup and stuff with the universe and the breakup, and they combined universes and stuff where you've got the 616 with the Ultimate Universe and stuff. And they had all those Avengers, and I bought a couple of the number ones, and I was like, oh, I'm going to follow the one with Miles. You know, so I got that one. And they had the one with Deadpool, which is the Unity Squad. Deadpool's in it, and Spider-Man was in it, Captain America, Rogue, and stuff. And I read the first one, and Spider-Man was like, Deadpool, I'm done. And he left. Now that I know that that was literally Spider-Man was only on the team for that one issue, I'm like, I should have got that dang one issue, man. Because they referenced it later. They're like, you were only on the team for one week, man. Like, I saw Deadpool. I was done. And on the side that I'm reading that series right now in the comics, it's called Spider-Man / Deadpool.
And nice. That's
the second issue. I missed the first one, so now I'm hunting for a reprint of the first one.
Oh, my.
Deadpool was taking a hit, a contract on Peter Parker.
Oh.
And he's teaming up with Spider-Man because he wants to be Spider-Man's best bro. And yet he hasn't told Spider-Man yet, you know, this is the job that we're going to be doing. And in like the third or fourth issue, they go, Deadpool takes Spider-Man out on a mandate. And they go out and he's like, we're going to go to a dance club. And Spider-Man and Parker like, that's not how Spider-Man works. I can't go out like this. He's like, don't worry, I got you covered. And he puts a little holographic device on him. And Peter's looking at him, he's like, holy cow, this is some hardcore tech, man. How do you, what the, you know? And he puts it on, and it turns him into this black dude with some reggae breads and a beard, you know? And he's like all dealt with a suit. Peter's like, but I'm black. And Deadpool's like, what? You got a problem with that? Are you racist? Because if you do, man, we got a problem. He's like, no, it's racist. No. And so they go in, and they're doing this date thing, and Deadpool sets up a double date. So Peter shows up, you know, and he's like, trust me, you know, this girl's got a thing for black guys. And so they go in, and Peter's like, he immediately starts falling for this girl, you know, and it's clear Peter's under some kind of sway. You don't figure it out till later, but the lady's a demon, you know. And so Peter's falling under sway. He's got all these hearts around him. He's like, tell me more about this, and let's do that, and let's go do this. And he's like, so when's your wife going to get here? He's telling Deadpool this, because at this point, Deadpool's married. He's like, oh, she's not coming. He's like, what do you mean she's not coming? He's like, I've got a list. He's like, on the list, it shows, you know, all these names. It's like Spider-Man, and you can't see below it. But, like, the fourth one on the list, it's all Thor. then it says, if Thor was ever a girl, you're like, oh God, I know where this is going.
Oh God, oh.
Thor shows up because, hey, Deadpool's now an Avenger, and so he's got the Avengers code, so he used Avengers Emergency to get her to show up, and she's like, pissed as hell. You used an Avengers Emergency, but he's like, well, yeah, we got an emergency here. Like, I've got one date. I need a date, you know? And so she gets mad, so she makes them do a dance-off kind of thing, and Peter just rolls with it, right? I'm dying at this point. And so he just starts doing it, and Deadpool's like, what are you doing? He's like, I don't ever get to get out, man. This is my one chance. I'm cutting loose. He's like breakdancing on the floor. You're like, what the heck? And so Deadpool gets into it too, and eventually they're doing the whole dirty dancing, and Spider-Man's lifting Deadpool above his head, and they come out, and they're both cracking up. And he's like, you did Spider Swayze. And Parker's laughing. He's like, that makes you dead, baby. He's like, oh, right at all. They had this great night, and Peter's, you know, as Spider-Man, he's like, oh, thank you, man. Thank you so much. I needed this. And he goes home, and Deadpool's like, yeah, like, that was great. I can't wait to do it again. And then he's like thinking about, well, I got to finish this job with Parker, right? And so he goes up and he knocks on the door of Parker's house. Parker opens the door and he's like, oh, you're not the breakfast burrito guy. He's like, hey, what are you? And all of a sudden, Deadpool pulls up a gun and shoots him right between the eyes. And then you're like, oh, the next panel, it shows Deadpool outside the door. You see the doorway, you see Parker's feet, and you see the next shot, he takes two more shots into Parker's body, and then he turns and he starts calling Spider-Man. He's like, I wonder what we're gonna do tonight. And it ends with Parker's, you know, laying, you see his arm, the phone, and blood on the ground, and the phone's lighting up with Deadpool calling him. And I'm like, what? Like, I'm waiting for the next issue. I'm like, this is like the coolest crossover ever, because you know they can't kill him, but it's just like, oh man, I can't wait to see where this goes. Yeah, I'm a tangent fool, man.
Okay. I will just say, if studios didn't have so much of a rights hang-up, that would be the best Deadpool movie ever.
But that's what I'm saying. It's like, you see this new Avengers lineup, and you're like, okay, clearly that's the direction they're going. And yet you know that there are characters that should be on this team that can't be right now. It sucks, man.
Right. But no, I know. We've had that talk before.
They're doing what they can to get around it, and you know, in a lot of ways, it's really creative. I'm getting a kick out of that, and I've got a lot of hope. I wasn't expecting much from Ant-Man. I kind of thought it was going to be like a Thor type. I was going to go in and just kind of be bamboozled and surprised, and I totally was. You know, they're definitely hitting A pluses in the characters that most people wouldn't have considered mainstays. You know, I guess most casual people kind of see Thor as one of their big threes, so he's like an exception.
Yeah. But
Doctor Strange and Ant-Man, those aren't characters that I could see them building a franchise, per se, around,
mm-hmm.
like Iron Man and Captain America. So I think they're doing a good job with how they're promoting these things and the way that they're writing them, because it's definitely working in the, oh, that's a creative way to go about that angle.
All right. And that'll do it on this, show reviewing Ant-Man. Mark, you certainly don't leave a Ant-Man impression, but you leave a giant man impact. Thank you, my friend.
We leave no ant-sized stone unturned.
Oh, no. And, you know, we look out for our giant buddies, too. We got to.
True that.
All right. Well, and remember again, he who leaves the Baxter Building last turns out the lights.
Thank you for listening to Marvelcast, Earth's Mightiest Podcast.
Legend tells us one thing, history another. But every now and then we find something that belongs to both.
There are relics that predate the universe itself. An ancient force of infinite destruction.
You have no idea what you are dealing with. This is beyond you.
Why would you risk your life for this?
Because by now, all is giving us a chance.
Whatever happens on Earth, that's the end of it.
All Marvel and Marvel Studios proper is a subsidiary of the Walt Disney Company. All rights reserved.
I will bathe the Star Wars in your blood.